This podcast is intended for investment professionals. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Elgium Talks. I'm Mark Chappell. Now, I don't know about you, but communicating and engaging with people about their pension and their investments has gotten harder in the last few years. At a time when the responsibility for each of our financial futures has been largely placed to each of us as individuals, and I'm thinking here of the heavy support for ISAs and for pension contributions, say, people are still really quite cautious when it comes to investing in the stock market. So in this episode, we wanted to explore how technology and technological infrastructure in particular are really crucial components in making investing that little bit simpler and a bit more appealing for all of our industry's clients. Joining Elgium Talks this week to share some of the lessons from their experience with tech development are Head of Personal Investing at Legal & General, Dame Helena Morrissey, and our Head of Proposition, Steve Davis, whose role it is to bring some of these ambitions of engaging the nation to life. One final thing before we go on to the episode is that if you're enjoying Elgium Talks and the sort of content that we're producing, we absolutely would love a five-star rating. Please, a five-star rating on the Apple Podcasts app. And also, if you have any thoughts about who else we should be interviewing, please do let me know. I mean, we've had Richard Roma Lee from Square Mile, and we've had the former chief exec of the Investment Association, Daniel Godfrey. So drop me an email, which I've put in the episode show notes, and I promise to badger them in a nice way to get them on the podcast. Thank you so much for listening again, and on with today's episode.
Hello, and welcome back to Elgium Talks, our dedicated podcast for investment professionals. I'm Catherine Fowles, also known as CJ, and today we'll be talking everything personal investing and how technology can help us take better control of our financial provision. Joining me today are Helena Morrissey, Head of Personal Investing here at Legal & General, and Steve Davis, Head of Proposition, also in Personal Investing. Helena and Steve, thanks for joining us in the studio.
Pleasure.
Thanks, CJ.
Before we begin, it would be great if you could tell our listeners about your most ridiculous tech purchase and if there's a particular piece of tech or an invention you're steering well clear of.
That's an easy one for me, CJ. So a couple of years ago, I bought a 5-bedroom Sonos sound system, which remains in its box to this day. We've never plumbed it in or plugged it into the house. And I've got some forms. So there was a road bike I bought 3 years ago and spent a lot of money on it, and it's still in its box in the garage.
Okay, so hopefully you don't continue that form this year in 2020. That'd be fantastic.
Quite a lot of confidence in Steve for that moment.
The tech I'm nervous of, I'm not ready for voice yet. I think there's a bit more to do just to understand its uses and how we make it relevant in our world.
Yeah, I don't think you're the only person there, Steve. And Helena, how about you?
Well, I don't know if it counts that I acquired some technology. We bought a house that had a Sonos kind of system in, but it also had a video sort of projector for the TV. So the projector, you know, a screen came down and then you switched on the TV and watched it on this screen, which seemed, you know, incredibly sort of artistic, and you didn't have to have a big TV on the wall. However, the thing kept breaking, and years later and many thousands of pounds later, we've now put a TV on the wall. Like Steve, I wouldn't have an Alexa or something like that in my house. I'm just wary of where it all goes.
Well, those stories are very interesting and lead me on to talking about tech within asset management and investing. So, Helena, personal investing, we're on a mission to engage the nation, helping people who might not even know they had a workplace pension to understand what they're really doing and owning when they save and invest, and also to consider their financial well-being as an extension of their overall well-being. It's an ambitious goal. Please, could you tell us a bit more about this and also the role that tech has to play?
Well, I think it's a very little understood phenomenon that people are wary about investing, and yet it's not just our interest that they save and invest, but obviously first and foremost is theirs, that clearly in the past few years already, and increasingly so, responsibility for your finances, particularly in old age, is transferring to the individual. So it does make me very worried, particularly about women who tend to invest less than men, not just because we have less money on average, but because we seem to be more wary still. And younger people who, if they can get into the habit of everyday investing, it would really save them a lot of money, literally, in the long term. So it is a real mission. I don't think one can say it in any other way. Certainly many have tried and no one's quite succeeded in it yet. And I think in a way, the expectation that you just put in great technology and everything else follows is not enough. You have to emotionally engage. You have to make investing relevant, appealing, something that perhaps not top of everyone's to-do list, but something that they will get around to doing.
Definitely. And I think while tech is not a panacea for everything, Steve, I think you can probably tell us just how you know, important it is to the investment experience and actually getting people engaged with their financial provision. It's pretty important.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's foundationally important just for us to have some building blocks from a tech point of view so that we can engage our customers or our potential customers in the right way. We've probably not invested enough over the years in doing that. And so right now in personal investing, we're on a bit of a race, a bit of a mission to undo some of the underinvestment from those previous years. It means that for the first year or two, it's a bit unsexy. With the iceberg analogy, we're building the stuff below the line of the water right now. We've got a new platform we've put in place that will give us access to a range of product wrappers that our customers can invest in. The tech is modern. That means we can build out on it in the future in a very sort of easy and sensible way. And then we can start to do the cool things around how we personalize our engagement with our customers depending on their needs.
That's amazing. And I think it's not just, you know, Legal in general that are kind of needing to invest in tech. I think it's a trope of the industry on the whole, actually. And I did read somewhere that I think the FCA had also tried to crowdsource, you know, developers to help them make their reporting more transparent. So I think there generally is a need, not just a trend, towards having to embed tech in a much better and more sensible way, in a way that pivots customers. That's you know, pretty important for the whole industry.
I completely agree. I think from a customer point of view, absolutely.
I think there's two extra challenges. One is that clearly those that are starting up businesses in lots of ways have an advantage. They don't have the scale that something like someone like Legal & General has, but they do have a clean sheet of paper and they can start from, you know, with using all the best technology there is now. And one of our challenges is obviously going from legacy to where we need to be. So that adds to the mix. But having said that, everyone, you know, the other challenge is that everyone just expects brilliant technology that works well, that is personalised, that just doesn't go wrong. And obviously, I think people are a little bit wary now as well of giving in their data and just, you know, embracing everything wholeheartedly. But they do expect everything to be pretty state of the art.
I think just to Helena's point, CJ, so we're just about to launch our pension wrapper, you know. It's taken about 9 months for us to get this thing to market. And about two thirds of the cost is to integrate the new platform with our existing systems within L&G. Now, those fintechs out there don't have those same challenges that we have. And therefore, it means we've got to just invest right now to get over these lines, to get ourselves on a par with the fintechs. Once we've done that, we can start to innovate and do things differently.
So you're investing to grow and innovate and ensure you're future-proofing the business. But I guess it's also about marrying up product offerings such as ISAs with customer and client behaviours and ensuring that the technology is in place to allow it to operate smoothly so customers really can, on a day-to-day basis, feel like they really are in control. So I guess my question to both of you is, yeah, what do you think is the most important thing about the tech we're putting in place to benefit our customers?
Well, I think it's, in all honesty, the tech we're putting in is more like a license to operate. I don't think it's going to be a particularly strong differentiating factor. And then what we just don't have at the moment, and we're working very hard on, is putting in the tech to really bring that to life and to be able to reach so many of the existing L&G customers who would love, I think, to just for simplicity, if nothing else, to also invest with us.
Thanks. And Steve, what do you think?
So echo everything Helena said. I think the other point is that we are in a race to build our product wrappers right now. So the ISA, the junior ISA, the pension. But what's probably really true is that our customers don't necessarily care about those products. What they care about is what the products can do for them. And so I think the key is we get the tech there. We keep making the same point. But then we start to market those products in a different and a differentiated way to those customers. What do the products enable them to do? If they save in a regular basis, is it their child's or their grandchild's university fund in the future? Is it saving for retirement? Is it getting that deposit on the first home? We need to start changing the narrative and changing the conversation to what these products enable rather than the product themselves.
What do you think it means to be truly innovative? And Steve, I'll start with you.
A key area that we want to get into is personalization. So how can we make a customer feel like we've built whatever it is we take to market just for them? Because when they land on .com or when they go into my account or when they're buying product from us, we know or they can have confidence that they're buying the right thing for them. So I think the way we do it is around data. So how do we use the data that we hold from our customers or that we know about how customers have got to us in the first place? So how have they landed on .com in the first with their first interaction? And we can start to serve our proposition up to them in a way that they will feel it's very, very relevant.
Mostly when people say they don't get invested, it's not necessarily out of fear. It's because they don't know where to start.
So being innovative really is, it's not about, you know, the developments, the innovations, the inventions. It's also about meeting your customers in the middle and going where the customers are and making sure that what it is that you're offering isn't just something that you've thought up. You're creating the demand yourself with a new way of looking at things and a new way of approaching the customer experience.
Absolutely. And I think that the risk historically would have been that we could do some really cool and creative things. But the point any customer or potential customer came to us and landed on our website and went into our customer journeys, it would feel very disparate from the campaign we'd had. The reason we're investing now in the new tech and in the new way of innovating and showing our propositions to the customers is that end-to-end journey can flow more naturally.
I think it's worth stressing. I mean, there are two sides to the same coin, really. But I think the other thing is, of course, in the fund management industry, there tend to be people sort of scratching their heads. Different competitors as ours have tried to do what we're trying to do and not seen the uninvested sort of come to them. And I think it's because there's been this attitude that if you build it, they will come. But they won't, because they're not interested in it particularly, and they know that perhaps that there's a sort of nagging thing in their back of their mind that they should be more involved in their financial arrangements. But we have to do something that fuses that sort of emotional attachment, that appeal, that sense of being relevant with then really, yeah, that when you get on their website, it fits with what you read.
Amazing. So that takes me on to my next question. So in terms of financial inclusion, I think we are seeing widening financial wealth inequality across the UK and Europe and, you know, across the globe. So do you think it's important that we are realistic in how we deploy tech? I think there's a quote that somebody once said that the future is here, it's just unevenly distributed. So how do we make sure that we're being inclusive towards everybody, you know, whether you're saving £20 a month into a stocks and shares ISA, or whether you're maxing out your ISA limit? How do you make sure that you're being inclusive with the tech that you deploy?
Well, I think it's a question of making sure you're not building something that's one size fits all. Steve's talked about tailoring the experience, but there's others around the country. We've tried, it's a little bit sort of further back in the journey, really, but with Mumsnet and Grandsnet, and we have very long-term aspirations around the badge that we've sponsored for the Girl Guides. So these are all things that will take many years and touch different types of people in different parts of the country, very different financial situations. What we're trying to show is that anybody can invest. You don't have to be wealthy. Clearly, there are people who've got expensive debt and who are financially vulnerable, and that needs to be resolved before they start investing. But for vast swathes of the population, investing is genuinely for them.
Absolutely. And with inflation and everything, it's probably better that you think about investing
right now
in the long term.
You know, people have been holding their breath waiting for interest rates to rise. Mm. In fact, we've just been down to Durrance Villages, which is something, you know, with the workplace on retirement and people in 101 ways of enjoying your retirement. And it was really clear there that, you know, again, people have thought long and hard in that case about their financial needs because it's right there in front of them. Whereas, you know, there are lots of people who haven't.
I think the inclusivity point is, well, there's a number of things we've done and there's more we need to do. So we've reduced the minimums. It's £20 a month now. It's £100 lump sum. So most, if not all, people can afford to get on the investing ladder, which is one of the barriers I think historically we've had. I think we've got a better understanding now from our customers as well about why they're not investing. So we've done lots of testing over the last period of time. They give us little insights, and there's some sort of slightly off the wall insights coming through that as well, in that it can help us drive our tone of voice and how we engage our customers. We went to a group of people and asked them who they engage with, who they talk to about financial matters, and it's their friends in the pub, or it's their hairdresser, or it seems like that. It's not a financial advisor, and it's not an asset manager. So those sorts of insights coming through, we're trying to turn into propositional enhancements, you know, through the tone of voice work we're doing as well, through our website, how we're trying to make lots of small marginal gains through how we're engaging customers. And we're starting to see those conversions improve, where people are engaging more with what we're doing.
So what investing really is, what we really own, is really down to better ways of communication. I feel like tech really facilitates that. You know, if you can't speak to your customers, you know, via mobile, or you can't, you know, contact them via email in really innovative ways. And I think tech is the ultimate arbiter of, you know, managing your own finances and get, you know, having a handle on what it is that concerns you. So my final question to the two of you is, what's next for personal investing, and how do you see the personal finance landscape changing?
well, what I'd like to see happen would be more people contemplate, you know, what it means to be financially well and to look after themselves and to get more interested and involved. What I'm afraid of in the short term is that we've obviously got a very big, political dynamic that's affecting markets, not necessarily domestic issues, although that does have a bearing, of course, but also, of course, the trade war that's being discussed, and that's quite unprecedented. So I think we do need to counteract that, not to downplay the issues, to be realistic about that, but to make sure it doesn't put people off getting more financially educated.
To pick up on Helena's point, we've got the state pushing the responsibility to the individual. Earlier this year, we saw the auto-enrolment rates go up again. So people are thinking more and more about their personal finances. I think with the investments we're making right now, we can ensure we've got the right solutions in place so that when they're considering their future and they're looking at how they save for the future, we've got the right tools in our bag that they can come and talk to us about that.
And ultimately, this is not about our financial well-being. It's about individuals who can really take control.
Thank you, Helena and Steve, for being here today with me.
Thank you, CJ.
Thanks, CJ.
Thanks very much. You can find out more about Legal & General Personal Investing at legalandgeneral.com/investments. Thanks to our production team, and thank you for listening. And we'll see you again next week for more LGIM Talks.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in Legal & General investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.